Good morning, everyone, and happy Feast of Tabernacles, day number two, to all of you who are inside of this beautiful meeting hall, and to all of you who are outside of this hall, viewing by webcast or listening in by phone. And those who are viewing by webcast or listening by phone, you cannot see it, but extending about 20 feet to my left and 20 feet to my right of this lectern, of this stage, is beautiful flowers and plants for a very beautiful stage setting, making these services even more special. And I want to thank everyone who arranged the stage. It is very beautiful. The special music was very beautiful as well. I want to thank our ladies for the special music. The melody, I thought, was a beautiful melody, and the lyrics, of course, about the pearl of great price. This is the first time that my wife and I have been able to keep the feast here at Orange Beach. So this is new to us, old hat to many of you, but our very first time. In fact, the last time either of us, my wife and I, were at a feast anywhere in this whole part of the country, the coast or the southeast, anywhere in this whole part, was at a place called St. Petersburg, Florida, which many of you old-timers have been to, but that was years ago. In fact, that was so many years ago that at the time it was called Leningrad, Florida. But it's good to be together with all of you here at the feast in Orange Beach this year. It really is. We all know that God's kingdom needs to come to this earth. But will it come soon enough? Is it going to get here soon enough? Leading scientists right now are warning that the end of this world as we know it is not a question of if, but it's only a question of when. Because when you look at the facts, and when the scientists look at the facts now of the increase of the world's population, combined with the depletion of the ocean's fisheries and the world's forests and fresh water supplies, combined with the increase in droughts and natural disasters that have been taking place, combined with a hair trigger on the nuclear weaponry of the world, enough weapons, in fact, to destroy all life on Earth many times over, it's not a question of when, it's just a question of when. When is it going to happen, the end of this world? The doomsday clock, which is something that a group of scientists have been maintaining since 1947, it's called the Doomsday Clock. A group of scientists keeping up with this. It represents how close the world is to a global catastrophe as the number of minutes prior to midnight. Midnight is global catastrophe end of the world scenario. And the Doomsday Clock is set in terms of how many minutes are we right now before midnight. The clock's original setting in 1947 was at 7 minutes to midnight. Remember, that was after World War II, and now we have nuclear weapons that just came on the scene. It has been set backward and forward 24 times since then, the largest number being 17 minutes before midnight. That was in 1991. And the closest setting to midnight being at 100 seconds, which is where it is right now, starting in January of this year, and it currently is at that point now, less than 2 minutes, 100 seconds. So will God's kingdom come soon enough before all life is destroyed on this earth? Well, if we go to Matthew 24 and verse 22 and read what Christ said, then we know, and it's only because we know and have this inside track, this insight to what is going to happen in the future, only because we know that, because God has told us that, and because we believe it, we believe God. Matthew 24:22, Christ said, "Unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved." And it means saved physically alive. No flesh, human flesh, animal flesh, any flesh on this planet. It would all end. That is where the world is headed. But Christ did say that for the elect's sake, but for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. So because we believe what Christ said, we know God's kingdom, Christ will come, and God's kingdom will come before all life is destroyed on this earth. And if he didn't come in the nick of time, it would all be destroyed. But it will come in time. But have you ever privately asked yourself a different question? Will God's kingdom come too soon? Will it come too soon? In other words, did you ever hope it wouldn't come just quite yet? I suspect that for the majority of us in this room, there have been times when we have really, really wished God's kingdom would come really soon. I also suspect that for many of us, there have been times when we have privately thought the question, will it come too soon for me? The answer to that question probably depends largely on where you are in life. In other words, if you were asked the question, do you want God's kingdom to come soon? The answer probably depends on where you are in life. For example, a preteen might answer that question, yes, let God's kingdom come now, because then there will be no school and no school bus that I have to ride, and no more homework, and I can have some awesome pets. So yes, let God's kingdom come soon. A teenager, at your point in life, you might answer that question, no. I want to experience adventure and romance and travel and romance and excitement and romance and challenges. Now, if you are in your 20s, 30s, 40s, young adult, in that category, you might answer the question privately, you might, or maybe you have at some point in time. No, not quite yet. I have a happy marriage, just starting my family. I have a nice house. My retirement fund is building up, and I don't want to lose that money. Not quite yet. I'm enjoying good health. I like my Sundays at the beach and my Monday night football. I've got a good job. I might make executive someday. So this is not really great timing for God's kingdom to come too soon. Besides, I haven't had much time to really pray and study yet. And so this is not really, great time. And I don't feel spiritually ready yet either. So I'd prefer God's kingdom not come quite yet. Now, someone in their 50s or 60s might answer that question, would you want God's kingdom to come soon? Might answer, I've got some arthritis setting in. By the time the 3.5 years of tribulation are past, I'll be near retirement anyway. Healthcare is starting to cost me more. So, I'd say yes, let it come. If you're already retired, then you might answer that question, yes, let God's kingdom come soon. I'm taking 25 pills a day for 6 different health problems. Insurance is a hassle. And Social Security isn't enough to cover mortgage and all those expenses. I'm not going to live many more years anyway. So, yes, this is a good time for God's kingdom to come. So, yes, it is possible to either want God's kingdom to come soon or not come soon. When looking at it from an individual perspective, or personal perspective only. Let's turn to Matthew 6 and verse 10. Matthew 6 and verse 10. Christ did tell us he will come before this world ends, but he also told us we are to pray to God the Father for his kingdom to come. Matthew 6, 10. As part of our regular daily prayer, your kingdom come. We often say the old King James, thy kingdom come, but we don't have to use the old King James word. Your kingdom come. We can pray, hasten your kingdom, speed your kingdom, however we want to put it. But does the verse, at least in probably most of your Bibles are New King James, does the New King James read, your kingdom come when I'm ready for it? Or does it simply say, we are to pray, your kingdom come? And Matthew 24, back to Matthew 24, the Olivet prophecy. Again, where we read verse 22, let's read verse 36. Matthew 24, 36. But of that day and hour, no one knows, no, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. So we know God's kingdom is going to come whenever the Father decides it's time. That's already a given. That's already determined by the Father. So why did Christ tell us then to ask God to bring his kingdom? If it's already determined by the Father, the timing of when it is going to come, why did Christ tell us every day when we pray, we are to pray, your kingdom come? The answer is, it is because we personally need to have a desire for that kingdom to come. A large part of the answer, you know, to the question why do we have to pray that every day when it's going to happen anyway, is because it needs to be on our mind every day. It needs to be something we express to God every day. God needs to know it's on our mind every day, and he needs to know we want it to come, and we need to express to God our sincere and earnest desire for his kingdom to come. But if our perspective of God's kingdom is based only on comparing with our life now, then we're looking at it through a very narrow lens, which is, to be more honest, a rather selfish lens. If we're only looking at it compared with our perspective, our life, in how much we want it. But what about the other billions of people for whom life in this world is essentially miserable compared to many, if not most, of ours? Now, granted, it is easy for us, especially in America, to not be fully aware or even very aware or tuned in to the reality of what life is like for billions of people around the world, because, well, this is the birthright blessings nation that God had promised and has kept his promise. In fact, he has kept that promise far beyond his obligation in terms of how good life still is in this country. And we have to admit, and I think we all do, we have life awfully good in this country. We still do. We have life so very good. And so honestly, it's not easy for us to really be in tune with the misery and what life is like for billions of people around the world, but we do need to be mindful of it. The city of Mumbai, India, which is what was formerly Bombay, Mumbai, India, has 6.25 million citizens living in slums. 6.25, that's not the whole population of the city, but that part of the city, 6.25 million, live in slums. And all of them struggling just to survive, where food and water and sanitation are major challenges every day. One slum alone in that city has 1 million people crowded in 8/10 of a square mile. Can you imagine being one of those residents or your family amongst a million other people in 8/10 of a square mile? And we've had the privilege of keeping the Feast of Tabernacles in the Philippines 1 year, which was a real pleasure and privilege. But we drove by many hillsides that were covered with little bitty huts, little bitty shacks where, you know, thousands upon thousands of people were living. And then every year we will hear of typhoons coming through that area, which is similar to the equivalent of hurricanes here. But in that part, it's called typhoons. And we just knew that those thousands, if not millions of people, would just be miserable. There's just nowhere to go, and they're just soaked to the bone. They have to be. There's just no protection. And that's every year. That's every year. Billions of humans this very minute are living in poverty. According to the last estimates of worldbank.org, over a quarter of the world's population lives on less than $3.20 a day. A quarter of the world's population, less than $3.20 a day. Nearly half of the world population right now is living on less than $5.50 a day. This very day, today, roughly 1 billion humans are perpetually hungry. Just they don't have enough to eat. And today, tens of thousands will die from starvation. Today, the second day of the Feast of Tabernacles. Also today, more than 150,000 men, women, and children will die of some disease. That's today, the second day of the feast. 150,000 will die of a disease, which is not pleasant. Every year, about 5 million people die from some injury to their bodies. Today, about 1,100 humans will be murdered around the world. Millions of people are conscripted against their will as pawns in the military, really nothing more than slaves, and face a fearful prospect of being killed or wounded. And they have no choice. Millions. Every 40 seconds, someone has committed suicide. Most of us have never been tortured, but someone this very minute is experiencing the agony of torture. Millions are struggling through life crippled or mutilated or with severe handicaps, you know, just horrendous handicaps. Billions of humans are grieving every day for their lost spouse or their lost child or parent. So when you think about even people like that, our fellow humans like that who are grieving for a precious loved one that they have lost, would any of us, when we really think about it, would any of us delay Christ's return for their sake to be able to see their loved one? No doubt they're praying every day urgently, you know, for the resurrection to come. Would any of us delay Christ's return in order that we might have more time in this world? And what about the meaningless and empty lives of billions of people living from cradle to grave with no understanding of any purpose for this life at all? Philippians chapter 2 and verse 4. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 4. We're told, let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. The coming of God's kingdom is in the interests of others. In fact, of the whole world, of billions of others. And so that means we are to be looking out for that interest. We are to be interested in that interest and longing for it as well. And when we look beyond our own life, we really can't help but pray, your kingdom come soon, quickly, as quickly as possible. But in addition to wanting God's kingdom to come urgently for other humans' sake, is there anything for us personally to look forward to? Well, yes, there is. So in addition to our urgency for wanting God's kingdom to come for the millions and billions in the rest of the world who are suffering and desperately need God's kingdom, but on top of that, there are many reasons we each personally have to look forward to God's kingdom. So let's go back again to some of those stages of life that we started out with, you know, asking the question to preteens and teens and on up. So starting back again with preteens. Preteens, what do you have to look forward to in God's kingdom? Starting with the millennium, what do you have to look forward to? For a preteen who lives from this world into the millennium, what are some things to look forward to? Let's turn to Isaiah 60. Isaiah 60. So what about these young children of baptized members? And I'm sure our pre-teenagers, many have thought about this. But what about the young children of baptized members when Christ returns? Well, of course, those baptized members who have God's Spirit, either when they died or still alive at Christ's return, they will be changed into spirit beings. But the indication in the Bible is that these young children who live into the millennium will be where their parents are. And isn't that, in fact, God's design? Parents taking care of their own children. Here in Isaiah 60, verse 1, is a millennial prophecy about Jerusalem in the millennium. Arise, shine, for your light has come, speaking to Jerusalem, and the glory of the Eternal is risen upon you. Jerusalem will be Christ's official residence in the millennium. Verse 4, again speaking to Jerusalem, lift up your eyes all around and see, they all gather together, they come to you. Your sons shall come from afar, and your daughters shall be nursed at your side. Now, the official residence of first fruit saints, the official residence of of city of first fruit saints will be Jerusalem. Even though our rulership responsibilities will be in other cities, but our official residence is Jerusalem. But prophecies like this show there will be children at Jerusalem with the residence, the official residence of Jerusalem. And when we consider that parents who are in the first resurrection and become spirit, they will be ruling over other humans. You think about that. As spirit beings, they're going to rule over other humans. Why wouldn't they take care of humans who are their own children? Of course they will. And preteens, yes, of course, there are the great pets that you could have. Isaiah 11, there are indeed those great pets when the nature of animals has been changed to non-aggressive. Isaiah 11 and verse 6, the wolf also shall dwell with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the young goat. The only time a leopard will lie down with a young goat today is with the young goat inside the leopard. The calf and the young lion and the fatling together and a little child shall lead them. And we will see that happen. And you preteens, you will watch that happen, come to pass. The cow and the bear shall graze, their young ones shall lie down together. The lion shall eat straw like the ox. So with all animals being non-aggressive, I would think you could have almost anything for a pet. Of course, you'll have to ask your parents, you know, before obtaining the pet you want, you'll have to keep your room clean and eat all your vegetables. And you would have to take good care of that pet and count the costs in advance. A lion, for example, might go through a bale of hay every day. And so somebody has to either go cut and bale that hay or buy it from someone. So, you know, you have to think about the realities and you have to take care of it. Yeah, I can just see the picture now, you know, parents in the millennium saying, yeah, he said he was going to take care of the lion the whole time from a cub, but now who's taking care of it? And what about fun? What about fun? Will there be fun in the millennium? Now, whoever said that spirit beings can't play games? You know, show me one scripture in the Bible that says spirit beings can't play games. So even if your parents are spirit, is there any reason they could not go out and play games with you outdoors? Hide and seek, of course, now they would have to agree. They will not cheat and go invisible during hide and seek, or indoor games, table games. Maybe they could give you a ride through the air on their back, like Superman, but in real life. And the indication of Scripture is, yes, that would certainly be possible. But the point is, you should think more about how real life in the millennium will be and how much better it will be than the best times you can imagine today. Acts chapter 2 and verse 21. Acts chapter 2 and verse 21, a prophecy of what's coming. And it shall come to pass that whoever calls on the name of the Eternal shall be saved. At that point in time, we're in the millennium, and everyone is called. So God is going to open the tree of life to everyone. Everyone will be called, every human. And every human in the millennium will learn God's truth, in most cases from, you know, from point A, from scratch, from the very start, and then have the opportunity to repent and then be baptized and receive God's Spirit and in due time be given immortality, changed into spirit. Verse 39, for the promise is to you and to your children. So this is being said to adults that God has called into his church and being promised God's Spirit, but also the promise is to the children of members of God's church. So if you are a preteen or even a teen, at that time, living into the millennium, you will already have a huge head start, whereas other humans will have to start from the point of just starting to be called and starting to learn and learn God's truth for the first time. But you're already at that point now, so you've got a huge head start already. And if it is in the millennium when you become an adult and are baptized and receive God's Spirit, then presumably your change to spirit would come at some point during the millennium. In other words, you wouldn't die in order to be resurrected in the second resurrection, which is for people who would be given their first chance and never had God's, you know, opportunity to embrace God's truth and have God's Spirit. That's what the second resurrection is for. Let's go on to teenagers. Teenagers, is there anything that you have to look forward to in God's kingdom? Of course, if you are by that point baptized when Christ returns, if you are already baptized and sealed with the Holy Spirit before Christ returns, then you will be part of the first resurrection, changed into spirit at Christ's return. And what does that mean? Well, that alone is something to focus on and to think about, and how, you know, wonderful, how great that is going to be. In fact, this applies to everyone of any age now who will be in the first resurrection. Some of these previews we're going to look at. 1 John 3 and verse 2. 1 John 3, 2. This is a description of Christ in the first resurrection. So let's just jump into verse 2. Beloved, now we are children of God. That's when we are begotten by God's Spirit. It's like an infant inside the womb of the mother already, the child of the mother and father, but not yet born. It's like that. It has not yet been revealed what we shall be, as in the child has not yet been born. But we know that when he is revealed, that means when Christ returns and we actually see him, you know, with our own eyes, we shall see him as he is in his full glorified state. Being spirit, being changed into spirit, we'll be able to see him in his full glorified state. And it says, we shall be like him. We will be like him. So knowing that, what were some of the things Christ was able to do as spirit when he was resurrected to spirit after his death? So let's look briefly at what Christ is like as a spirit being. John 20, after his resurrection, when he then was resurrected to spirit, no longer human flesh, but spirit. John 20 and verse 19. Then the same day at evening, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut. Now, the Apostle John, who was an eyewitness to all of these events, he makes a deliberate point of making it clear. The doors were shut, as we're going to read verse 26 also. It's like he is telling you, I was there. The doors were shut. I know it. I saw them. They were shut. We locked them. We deadbolted them. Where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood in the midst. And John said, but the doors were shut, and Christ just appeared. So he just passed through whatever walls or doors there were, which is what a spirit being can do at will. A spirit being can move through physical substances. Verse 26. After 8 days, his disciples again were inside, and Thomas with them. Jesus came, the doors being shut. John makes a deliberate point that we were in the room, the doors were shut, and Christ just appeared. And that's what a spirit being can do, and that's what we can do, that's what you can do when you are spirit, the very same thing. We will be like him. Luke 24, a spirit being can travel tremendously fast. Luke 24. We talk about the speed of light and science fiction and warp, you know, warp multipliers of the speed of light. Warp 5, warp 7. But the speed of light, when you think about the size of the universe God created, the speed of light is painfully slow. When it comes to traveling through God's creation, our closest star would take over 4 years at that speed. A spirit being can travel at the speed of thought. Luke 24:13. I think this is the one I want. We'll come to this one. But there, within the Gospels, is the description of Christ after he was resurrected. The next morning, the next day, he traveled up to the third heaven to God the Father, and that very same day was back down on the earth. So however far away the third heaven is, perhaps many light years away, perhaps millions of light years away, however far it is. But he was able to travel all the way there and back in the same day. Here in Luke 24:13, let's read this little episode. For a few verses. Now, behold, two of them were traveling that same day, two disciples, to a village called Emmaus, which was about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they talked together of all these things that which had happened. So it was, while they conversed and reasoned, that Jesus himself drew near and went with them. Here are two men walking to this town, and Christ comes up from behind them and starts talking with them. So it was, while they conversed and reasoned, verse 16, but their eyes were restrained so that they did not know him. In other words, to them, he was looking like any normal, ordinary human being. They had no suspicion that this is Jesus Christ who was crucified and killed and has come back to life. He looks like a normal human being, which is what a spirit being is able to do, appear completely as any normal human being. Verse 30. Now it came to pass, as he sat at the table with them, that he took bread, blessed, and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened. He permitted them to know it's him, it's Jesus Christ. And he vanished from their sight. He was in the chair at the table, looked like any human being, and then, poof, he's gone. The chair is empty, and that's what a spirit being can do. Appear, go invisible, at will, anytime. Verse 36, now as they said these things, Jesus himself stood in the midst of them, the disciples, and said to them, peace to you. But they were terrified. Why? Because again, he just appeared out of nowhere, out of thin air, he just appeared. And I think most of us probably our heartbeat would go up a little bit, no doubt, if someone just appeared right in front of our eyes. And he did. And he said to them, why are you troubled? And why do doubts arise in your hearts? Behold my hands and my feet, that it is I, myself. Handle me and see, for a spirit. Now when they said, suppose they had seen a spirit, that to them that was like an apparition, a ghost, a demonic type of ethereal type of a being, a terrifying being. And he said, no, that's not what I am. A spirit does not have flesh and bones, as you see I have. So when Christ was resurrected, very clearly to a spirit being, when he chose to appear to humans, it was in a completely human form, including flesh and bones. But notice he does not mention blood. He does not mention blood. In fact, there's a gaping wound that he allows to still be apparent for Thomas to put his hand into the side, and there's no blood coming out of it. For a human being, the life is in the blood. For a spirit being, the life is self-inherent. It's just with life within itself, no need for blood. So it is going to be nice for all of us, when we're spirit, to never have to worry about that messy stuff leaking out, blood, and how it stains and everything. Just no more problem with that. It will be nice, never having to worry about bleeding. Verse 41, but while they still did not believe for joy and marveled, he said to them, have you any food here? So they gave him a piece of broiled fish and some honeycomb, and he took it and ate in their presence. So that's another wonderful thing to look forward to. In case anyone has worried that, when we're a spirit being, we won't be eating. And maybe that's a little depressing to think about. Well, Scripture is very clear, even in the Old Testament, spirit beings eat. Spirit beings can eat. Spirit beings do eat. Not for nourishment, not for fuel, because that's not needed for the life. But why? Why would a spirit being want to eat? Well, obviously, for the enjoyment that delicious food brings. I think of it as in a similar way. Why would you want to smell, a very fragrant flower or something else that smells good? Do you need to? No, don't need to. Is it for your survival? No. So why do you want to? Well, because it's pleasant. It's one of the pleasant things in life. In the same way, that the taste of delicious food is pleasant. It's enjoyable. And life in God's kingdom, in all aspects, is intended to be enjoyable. That's what it's all about. And the scriptures do say, we will be eating and drinking in God's kingdom as spirit beings. Christ said, at his last Passover, before he was killed, he said he would not drink wine after he left the earth until he drinks it with us in his kingdom. So he is going to drink wine with us after he returns. So putting all these facts together, young people especially, what are the ramifications? What's the implication of the fact that spirit beings can eat, spirit beings can pass through physical substances? So what does that mean? Well, that means when you're spirit, you could get something out of the refrigerator without opening it. You could. Anyway, Acts 1 and verse 9. Those are the kind of thoughts that young people dwell on, keeps them up at night. Acts 1, verse 9. Spirit beings defy gravity, are not held down by gravity. Now, when he had spoken these things, while they watched, he was taken up, he lifted off the earth, and a cloud received him out of their sight. He went up into the clouds. So as a spirit being, Christ just lifted off of the earth at will, and that's what we will be able to do as well as spirit beings. One thing that many teenagers don't like to do in this life is go to bed and sleep. Well, as a spirit being, that problem is solved. As a spirit being, you will never, ever need to sleep. Never need to recharge, you know, batteries, our life's batteries. Always fully charged, 100% full charge all the time. Never need to take a nap. I'm going to miss that, but won't ever need to. What about any adventure or excitement or challenges? Will there be anything like that? During a discussion at the Challenger camp one evening some years ago in the Grand Tetons of Wyoming. We were around a campfire. One teenager asked, what could possibly be thrilling as a spirit being in spirit life? As he explained it, he said, it's the risk factor that you can take now as a human. He said, it's the risk that you can take that's fun. And he had to do a little explaining. We were asking him because we had maybe not considered that so much, but it's on his mind. It was on his mind and other teenagers' minds. For example, the bungee jumping. It's the risk factor, that thrill, the skydiving, that chance that you're taking that you could die doing this. That's part of the fun, as he was explaining it. Free climbing a huge cliff without a rope. Or being on snow skis for the first time ever and skipping the lessons and going straight down to Black Diamond. That's what's fun. that risk of breaking a leg. Driving a motorcycle really fast without a helmet. You know, that's what's fun. So it's the thrill, the risk. But I would answer that if you feel like you have to risk death to feel a thrill, then by the time your spirit, your thinking will simply be more mature than that. And I believe that that's a fact. But consider that human thrills are limited. Human thrills are actually limited. So we should never begin to think in terms that there's something in this human life that is better than something that anything we'll have in spirit life. Should never think that. That there's anything in this human life that's better or that we're going to be missing that's in some way better than it would be in spirit life. Human thrills are limited. to the confines of flesh and to physical laws. And they are limited to physical functions, such as heart rate, adrenaline flow, synaptic nerve firing, electrochemical reactions. Those are limitations in the flesh. But God made all those physical sensory systems in you. So don't you think that what he has designed in a spirit body is even better? John 10:10. John 10 and verse 10. Christ said, "The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly." Now, the reason he came the first time and is coming the second time, returning in the future, is for humans to have life more abundantly than life is in this world and in this flesh. Everything will be better, higher, more exciting, more satisfying. We can't comprehend how much higher the level of spirit experiences will be. Psalm 16 and verse 11. Psalm 16, 11, a prophecy through David. David was also a prophet, and this is of that future time when David will also be resurrected to spirit. "You will show me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy." God inspired him to prophesy this about life as a spirit being in God's kingdom. Fullness of joy, which we have not experienced yet. "At your right hand are pleasures forever." Pleasures forevermore, far better than human life, never becoming boring or monotonous. And yes, teenagers, even the physical human experience most of you teens are probably thinking about right now will be surpassed in spirit life. That's right, video games. No. I know teenagers think about whether they'll be able to marry before Christ returns. I know I did when I was a teenager. It was, couldn't help it, naturally. You think about, you wonder if you're going to be able to get married before Christ returns. And it's perfectly understandable and normal that a teenager would want to experience marriage, because a marriage is a good thing. It's a wonderful thing. God designed it. He created it. And so it's natural and healthy and normal to desire it. But we have to remember that we are still human and can only think in terms of human experiences. And there is a point in time in God's timetable when young people will be living into the millennium. Young people in God's church will be living into the millennium and not yet old enough to be married. So again, we have to remember we're still human. We can only think in terms of our human experiences. But God, through Christ, created the design of marriage, as well as every delight and pleasure that a human is able to experience in this human life and body. If Christ designed, and the Father through Christ, if they designed everything that's capable of being enjoyed by humans, then his comprehension of everything we could ever experience must be far greater. Isaiah 56 and verse 4. Isaiah 56 and verse 4. "For thus says the Eternal to the eunuchs who keep my Sabbath." Now, a eunuch is someone, specifically a man who either cannot have children, unable to have children physiologically, cannot, or don't marry and wouldn't be, won't be having children. So God is saying to them, who keep my Sabbaths, and in general, God's law, all of God's laws for that matter, and choose what pleases me and hold fast my covenant, even to them, I will give in my house and within my walls a place and name better than that of sons and daughters. I will give them an everlasting name that shall not be cut off. He's saying, even to those who don't marry or can't marry or won't marry and or don't have children, there is something better than human marriage that is coming. There is a reward far better than having a physical family. Revelation 11. There are details about spirit life and life in God's kingdom, which God has intentionally not told us, not yet. It's kind of like you don't tell someone what's in the wrapped up present that you have for them. It's like you have this gift, and you don't want them to open it quite yet. You know, there's a date that you intend for them to open it on. It's to be a surprise. It's to be wonderful. And you don't tell them, you know, everything that's in that wrapped up package up front. They're going to find out. It's kind of like that. God doesn't spell out everything that we're going to be enjoying in his kingdom. And we can't even grasp it yet. But this is where you trust God, and that's called faith. What we do know is God has an incredible plan, and it involves you personally, if you accept the offer. I believe that when the time comes, if teenagers, for example, given the choice between staying human a while longer, which is but a mere seconds compared with eternity, or being changed to spirit, I believe you will probably trip all over yourself to choose to become spirit when that time comes. And God does say he will reward everyone who fears and obeys him of any age. Revelation 11, 18, the nations were angry and your wrath has come and the time of the dead that they should be judged. And, this is that when Christ returns, and that you should reward your servants, the prophets, and the saints, and who else could there be besides prophets and members of God's church, baptized, the saints, and those who fear your name small and great. Well, that includes then even our children who fear God and who obey God. That includes our preteens. That includes our teens who fear and obey God will be rewarded. Christ will reward in some way. There are rewards and perks of some sort you'll be given, if you're not yet spirit in the millennium. It seems logical that would include assisting in rulership of cities. Other humans will be assisting spirit rulers. Why not much more so the very children of those rulers who have already been fearing and obedient to God? All right, let's move on to young adults now. Young adults, what do you have to look forward to? Keeping in mind everything we've said thus far, because it all applies to young adults as well, but some things you might be thinking about. Luke 19, 15. Luke 19, 15. How about travel? Many young adults, travel is one of those very appealing, desirable, enjoyable things to do in that stage of life. As a spirit being, you can travel anywhere on the earth you want to, anywhere, including deep within caves, the ocean floors, the Marianas Trench, the bottom of it, Mars, the planet Mars. And in traveling, you will not have to use your airline miles points. None of them. You can travel at the speed of thought anywhere you want to go. Luke 19, 15. In the parable of the minas, or the pounds, in the Old King James, And so it was when he returned, having received the kingdom, he then commanded these servants to whom he had given the money to be called to him, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Then came the first, saying, "Master, your mina has earned 10 minas." And he said to him, "Well done, good servant, because you were faithful in a very little, have authority over 10 cities." Now, those are literal cities. The parable is about when Christ returns to rule the earth, and his faithful servants will be ruling cities, literal cities. And according to how much we have overcome and grown with what God has given us. So imagine not just being the mayor of one city in today's world, but being the ruler and the director of all education for 5 cities or for 10 cities, and having the latitude to lay out, to plan any way you want each of those cities, set it up, design it, lay it out any way you want. Isaiah 9 and verse 7. Isaiah 9, 7. Prophecy of Christ's first coming and then second coming to set up his kingdom on earth. His first coming starts in verse 6. We're going to skip to verse 7 now, which moves forward to his second coming and setting up his kingdom on earth. Of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. Now, something never stops increasing. That means it continues to grow. It says there's no end to its increasing. In other words, God's kingdom will expand, eventually expand out into God's creation beyond the earth. You know, God has a lot of creation that's beyond this tiny pale blue dot of the earth. We think about other star systems. We think about the whole galaxy, the whole Milky Way galaxy, and other galaxies. Have you ever looked up into the night sky and wondered how many potential worlds are orbiting all those stars? Well, God created it all, not to remain vacant of life and just to be little twinkle lights forever, but for his kingdom to spread into his creation. The current estimate of the number of galaxies that are out there, the astronomers now, and they just keep increasing it, but the current estimate is now at approximately 2 trillion galaxies. For a time it was 100 billion. Then they upped it to 200. Now they're saying it has to be closer to 2 trillion galaxies out there, and with an average of some 100 billion stars per galaxy. Statistically, that would be approximately 20 galaxies per human who has ever lived on planet Earth since Adam and Eve. Approximately. Isaiah 45:18. So when God says of the increase of his kingdom there will be no end, and we, you know, it just blows our mind. We really can't even begin to comprehend how huge of a realm we're looking at, what we have to look forward to. Isaiah 45:18. "For thus says the Eternal, who created the heavens, who is God, who formed the earth and made it, who established it, who did not create it," that is, the whole creation is the subject here, the heavens, the earth, the whole creation, "did not create it in vain." The Hebrew word is tohu, which means a wasteland. God did not create it as a wasteland or empty land, "who formed it to be inhabited." In chapter 51 and verse 16. 51:15, 61:15, but I am the eternal, your God, who divided the sea, whose waves roared. The eternal of hosts is his name. And I have put my words in your mouth. I have covered you with the shadow of my hand, that I may plant the heavens, lay the foundations of the earth. So here we see the expression of planting the heavens in a way they are not yet, have not yet begun to be planted in due time. But the fact is, 700 billion years from now, life will be better than it will be 699 billion years from now. It will just keep getting better and better. Let's go on to our older adults now, in our age categories, in terms of how we view God's kingdom coming soon. But for our older adults, let's just add a few more things to all we have said thus far. 1 Corinthians 15:42. 1 Corinthians 15:42. 1 Corinthians 15 being what we call a resurrection chapter, and verse 42. So also is the resurrection of the dead. And specifically what's being talked about here is being resurrected from human death to spirit life. The body is sown in corruption. That's this human body. It is raised incorruptible. It is sown in dishonor. And many humans die what, you know, we could probably call a dishonorable death. It's lacking dignity in many ways, but it's the nature of this flesh. It is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness. It is raised in power. So we have perfect health to look forward to. Perfect health 24/7, year after year, decade after decade, century, millennium after millennium. No pills, no pharmaceuticals, no health insurance forms, hassles to fill out, no aching joints, no dentures. Kleenex will be out of business. I just think about all the realities, really. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 1, the way the Apostle Paul expressed it. For we know that if our earthly house, this tent, well, literally, it's a tabernacle. Tent, tabernacle. And Paul is comparing these bodies we live in to tents, to physical tents or tabernacles. And they're temporary. If this earthly tent is destroyed, meaning this life and this flesh, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. He's talking about our spirit body being like a house. We're going to get not just a fabric, you know, cotton tent, like what we're living in now, temporary, very fragile, ages quickly. We're going to get a house that is made of spirit, never perishes, it's eternal, it's waiting for us, God is bringing it with him when Christ comes. For in this we groan, in this physical tabernacle we're now living in this flesh, in this we groan. And the older we get, the more we groan. Earnestly desiring to be clothed with our habitation, which is from heaven. Earnestly desiring to be clothed with a new spirit body. So we should think about it, as it says, earnestly desiring. So we should be thinking about it, and we should be wanting it, and we should be looking forward to it. Other perks like financial security, never again worrying about mortgage payments, utilities, insurance, and it's becoming more complex all the time. And for all of us, how about the pleasure it's going to be to teach many people who will be under us God's laws one by one and watch their lives change progressively for the better as they do and as we teach them. For example, imagine each one that you teach about tithing. You teach them God's tithing law, how beautiful of a law it is, how perfectly it is works, and watching them start to tithe and watching them become blessed in their family finances. And you'll be a qualified teacher because you've been practicing it. You've been tithing faithfully in this life. Imagine each one of the hundreds or thousands of young couples that you will teach how to have a really happy marriage. And they start practicing what you're teaching them. And then watching their marriages and their families become so happy that they come and they thank you with tears. Isaiah 35 and verse 5. Another privilege and a delight this is going to be, and to be able to participate in this. Isaiah 35, 5. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. The lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the dumb sing. We will have a part in healing humans in God's kingdom. We'll be spirit beings, but even human beings have healed humans by God's power. Think of all the apostles and others who, by laying on of hands, have had that part in the healing of others. How much more when we are not just spirit beings, but God beings of the God family, have a part in healing whoever we want to. Romans chapter 8. So will God's kingdom come soon enough to save the human race and the planet? Yes, it will. But will it come too soon? The answer is absolutely not, because we want it to come fervently, not only for our sake, but for the billions of other humans made in the same image of God as us. And yet there's so much for us to look forward to, even personally, in the millennium alone, let alone the rest of eternity in God's kingdom. Romans 8:18. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. The Apostle Paul is saying, we do have to look at the big picture and what God does have in store for us. And there's a measure of faith, trusting God, that we can't even comprehend how wonderful it's going to be. But it is going to be so wonderful that the worst trials we go through in this life will be laughable. They just won't even be worth even talking about or comparing to what we're going to be experiencing as a spirit being after Christ returns, which will be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creation, so everything God has created, it's like sitting on the edge of its seat in anticipation of Christ's return and when we are turned into spirit to assist him, eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, which includes a state of decay, the dynamic of entropy, there's a winding down as well, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope, knowing what his plan is. Because the creation itself, and that includes the planets, the stars, the galaxies, the pockmarked, moon, everything, will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now. So in the meantime, until that day arrives, we too are groaning within ourselves in these temporary tabernacles of flesh. And as we pray every day, your kingdom come soon.